May it please the court, James Womack on behalf of Deron Woods. I'd ask that 2 minutes be reserved for rebuttal, please.
I'm in desperate need of a sixth grader right now. Go ahead. I'll catch up to you here with this thing at some point.
Good morning.
I have no idea what I did. Go ahead.
Here we go. Good morning, Your Honors.
Morning, counsel. The respondent, I mean, the appellant in this case is asking for the court to remand this matter for a new trial. Our narrow basis for that, Your Honor, is the acknowledgement or our position that in the admission of 404B evidence in this case, the court, the prosecution, and the state all failed to recognize the role of implicit bias in the factoring of a guilty determination by the jury in this case. The defense has cited two cases that I think is are primarily focused, the court should focus its efforts on, the first being State v. Monday and State v. St. Cali. In State v. Monday, as the court is aware, there the Supreme Court reversed this division, I believe, based on a determination that the court, the trial court, failed to acknowledge what in that case were fairly overt representations by the state's representative alluding to race. In that case, it was the overt nature of the black snitch code that the prosecution, the state in that case, relied upon, among other things, including appealing to their power and prestige of the state and what have you, in order to render a verdict in this case. This case is a little different. In this case, without charging the defendant with promoting prostitution, the state, as it typically does in domestic violence cases, sought to admit a significant number of 404B evidence, prior bad acts. And as the law has developed in this area, it is essentially a non-standard when it comes to courts. It used to be, many years ago, courts would have an actual hearing on a 404B. Now, under the case law, they can just rely on an offer of proof, and the court goes through the three-part balancing test. Mm-hmm. So in this case, which involved assault, strangulation, the court allowed in prior bad acts. It rightfully, in the defense position, refused to allow in all the prior bad acts. But the focus of this case was that they allowed in prostitution evidence of pimping, in a context where that wasn't charged. This was, as the state alleges, to establish the defendant's putative control over the alleged victim. The problem is that this is exactly the type of case. Monday was easy. Monday involved clear representation or appeals to racial prejudice. But this is the type of case that I believe a competent jurist, a competent attorney, should be aware of in the modern age, in the 21st century. It's akin to arguing that essentially you should not be aware of juvenile brain development in juvenile cases. The research is very clear that implicit bias exists. Jurors routinely prosecute and convict black defendants at a higher rate than they do of other subcategories. Prosecutors prosecute black defendants at a higher rate. Judges impose bail at a higher rate. And it's unreasonable to believe that a jury, even if it's made up, even if it's more diverse, would not be impacted by implicit bias. There simply was just no reason to present this evidence in this case, with all the other evidence of domestic violence that was present under 404B. And so what we have essentially across the board, and this happened in Monday as well, Judge Hayden was sympathetic to the difficulties the state was having as it related to these difficult witnesses in Monday. The defense attorney was African American, didn't object to the allegation, to the argument of the state in closing. And it was a very strong case, as the state asserts in this case. I don't necessarily agree with that, but it was a strong case with videotapes and what have you. There, the court said, we have to make sure that juries or jury verdicts are clean from, or at least as much as we can avoid, you know, overt racially tinged verdicts. And in this case, given the fact that the defendant wasn't charged with promoting prostitution, the allegations, the test that was supposed to protect him, the ER-44B test, couldn't be effectively implied if executed unless there was some racial tone deafness by the jurist and the state and the defense attorney. And so our first argument as it relates to it is that the court, as the arbiter of the evidence, should have stepped in, just as they should have stepped in Monday. It should not have gotten to the point where it got to appeals court before the court said, oh, yes, you know, we can't have these allegations, these assertions to race infiltrate and insinuate himself into the jury process.
I think we'd like to hear you talk about the limiting instruction.
Yes.
We're 90 certainly. Seconds away. So
okay. The state is correct that no limiting instruction was requested. I can understand, as a trial practitioner, maybe having concerns about it, but in terms of, you know, some tactics. But the same thing could be said in Monday, that in that case there's nothing the defense did that's tried to encapsulate and protect this defendant from the negative impacts of the, in that case, overt appeals to racial prejudice. In this case, the reality is the difficulty of implicit bias makes it hard for all practitioners to actually identify this. I do believe that a competent attorney that's gone to CLEs, that's learned about how the IAT is becoming more and more of a part of our understanding of how juries make their decisions, would have at least identified that this is an issue. Instead, that attorney did not do that. I believe that in the last couple of years, an attorney that fails to do that falls below the standard.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Ann Summers on behalf of the state of Washington. The state would ask that this court hold that the trial court reasonably exercises discretion in letting in some of the proffered ER-404B evidence that was offered by the state. The trial court did not abuse its discretion in allowing evidence that, in addition to assaulting and threatening the victim in the course of their relationship, the defendant also forced her to engage in prostitution. This evidence was highly probative in explaining the delay in reporting the assault, which was at issue, as well as the defendant's financial motive for exerting control over the victim through violence. It's important to understand that the act alleged here occurred in September of 2011, and that act was not reported to the police until April of 2012. The jury did not hear any circumstances as to how it came about that the reporting occurred in April of 2012. What actually happened was that the defendant beat the victim so badly he knocked her unconscious and she required surgery. She was hospitalized in April of 2012, and that's how the police finally got involved. But the jury didn't hear any of that because the court felt that was more prejudicial than probative and was not relevant to her delay in reporting because it happened after the delay in reporting. So the jury was really left with no explanation as to why The victim not only did not call the police after she was strangled in September 2011, but then when her mother saw her very severe injuries, she didn't allow her mother to take pictures, and she didn't allow her mother to call the police or tell anybody about it. So the use of these acts explains the delay in reporting in a way that the jury wouldn't be able to understand without them. Now, this is, I believe, explicitly approved in Gunderson.
Let me ask you about the limiting instruction.
Okay.
So it frequently occurs that we get allegations of error that involve the contention that a trial lawyer should have requested a limiting instruction and did not, and no limiting instruction is given. And when it's coupled in terms of a ineffective assistance of counsel claim, often the thinking from the court is that could be tactical. If there's any conceivable tactical reason, we defer to the Sixth Amendment counsel to try their case in their own way. This case appears to be a little different because there was a limiting instruction given. So this is not a situation where there was a tactical decision made by counsel that once we're done with that, I don't want the jury hearing about any of these bad things again. There was a limiting instruction given. It just didn't include everything that could have been included.
Yes.
Is there a tactical reason that we could look at within this record?
Yes.
As to for that dichotomy or that difference?
Well, first of all, I always think with limiting instructions, they're great in theory. I think they're very difficult to word, both from a defense perspective and a prosecution perspective, as to what the proper purpose is for the jury to consider it. I can completely understand the defense not wanting prostitution mentioned in the limiting instruction because, at least from a defense perspective, sometimes that looks like the court is basically endorsing the fact that that was proven. So that's one possible theory. But I think in this record itself, it's very interesting. In the pretrial motion for ER 404B, and this is at page 25, the court specifically asked the defense to respond about the prostitution. And did you wish to respond to the prior bad acts proffer just looking to the prostitution pimping allegation? And defense counsel said, well, I think that if the prosecutor introduces that, there is cross-examination that may be relevant that may not be under the circumstances, so I'll defer on that issue. The defense then did indeed cross-examine her about prostitution and, in fact, was able to elicit that not only had she prostituted herself in 2011 at the defendant's behest, but in her defense interview, she had also disclosed that she prostituted herself again in 2013 at the defendant's behest. And so that was definitely an attack on the victim's credibility. And then in defense, he used it even in a different way. This is at page 379. He said, I suggest the evidence is Miss England got an injury, and she testified in her life of prostitution. She was scared. She ran from a guy. She testified to that. She obviously had an injury her mother observed, but Mr. Woods didn't cause that. Now, remember, it wasn't just he said, she said here, because the mother had seen the strangulation injury. And the mother didn't have all the credibility problems that the daughter did. You know, she wasn't a drug dealer or a drug addict. She wasn't a prostitute. So it seems to be the accepted theory here that the mother was telling the truth when she said she saw these injuries. So the defense theory was the mother was telling the truth, but it wasn't the defendant who caused those injuries. So he used the evidence of prostitution to argue that, well, prostitution is inherently a dangerous endeavor, so those injuries probably came from someone she came into contact with as she was prostituting herself. So if you're going to use it that way, I think it makes sense not to request a limiting instruction.
I understand everything you said up until the last clause. Are you saying that, and that is because there could not be a limiting instruction drafted? Is that what?
Well, I'm not sure if you're using it that way as substantive evidence that the injury was caused some other way, then you're not just using it to judge the victim's credibility.
Okay.
It feels like
it would not.
Which was the limiting instruction?
Not rightfully have fallen within.
Yes.
The instruction that was given.
Yes, because instruction was you can only use these acts to consider in judging the victim's credibility and for no other purpose. But clearly, defense had made a strategic decision to try to use it to explain the injuries. which I think is beyond and outside the box of just considering it for the victim's credibility. Again, the state would ask that, I think the record here is that the court carefully considered this evidence, carefully considered the probative and prejudicial value, and the decisions that the court made were manifestly reasonable, not manifestly unreasonable. Thank you.
So as it relates to the court's questions regarding the limited instruction, I think the court is correct that this issue was not encompassed in that limited instruction. The state's contention that essentially this was the manner in which the defense was responding was essentially making a kind of an other suspects argument. Again, that's where the court has to step in. If you're going to make another suspects argument, there's certain predicate and foundation you have to lay. And so I think that it's kind of beyond the ability of a jury to distinguish between the whole all these evidentiary kind of posturing. The reality is, at least as the defense is concerned, that in this case, without any actual proof of the prostitution, the state was allowed to bring this in, and the court did not do its job in carefully weighing that. And even though the defense attorney may have felt that he could deal with this effectively under cross-examination, that was only as it related to the alleged victim's credibility and these injuries. But the fundamental nature of the offense was, there was evidence out there that the alleged victim had been injured. And so there really wasn't any strategic reason not to resist the optics of a black defendant and a white victim being presented to this jury, and that's where the state failed.
Thank you.